cloth draped over the arm of her chair and mopping herself up with one before throwing the second to Lydia. Oh, sorry about that. Lydia waved her away. Probably the least disgusting thing your daughter's ever sprayed me with, to be fair. Mila smiled in return, propping Clara up on her chest and rubbing her back gently. Within a few moments, the tiny infant produced the most unholy belch Lydia had ever heard, and then fell straight to sleep on her mother's shoulder. Not hungry after all, Mila said, her voice almost a whisper as she laid her daughter gently back in her cot and patted her chest for a few moments to settle her. Lydia smiled, a small tug in her chest catching her off guard as she watched Clara fling all four limbs wildly out to the side before settling back to sleep. Baby Ollie had done just the same. Aren't you going to tell me that feeding for comfort is the reason she doesn't sleep through the night? Mila asked, as they both crept out of the nursery and paddered back towards the stairs.
Nope,
Lydia replied, the edge of her mouth creeping into a smile. I made all the mistakes in the book with Ollie, and she turned out okay. Mila smiled, but there was an edge to it, some perceived inadequacy nagging at her. Lydia couldn't even imagine the pressure of raising a child under the shadow of the agony Mila had been through to get her. She bumped Mila's shoulder lightly with her own. She's fed, she's clothed, and she's loved. She found her friend's gaze, ducking down when their eyes didn't quite meet. You're doing just fine. Mila's smile turned more genuine then, and Lydia knew by the change in Mila's stance that she had heard her. They heard Tosh and Jake's laughter before they were even all the way down the stairs, and the sound of it was enough to change the mood completely. Well, Mila said, quietly enough that there was no chance that the men would hear. You and Jake might have a fake relationship, but I think there's at least one real love story going on here. And the women laughed as they stepped back out into the heat of a perfect summer evening, both forgetting the things weighing on their minds for just a couple of hours, as together they witnessed the birth of an epic bromance. Chapter 19. The following morning was no less hot, and Lydia was sweating in a variety of places she hadn't even realised she had places as they climbed out of the baking heat of Jake's car. She'd been delighted when he first mentioned he'd bought a car, as she'd been the designated driver for as long as she'd known him. But her joy had turned to horror in an instant when Jake had pulled the damn thing up outside Agger's house at 8:30 a.m. that morning. Honestly, Lydia had not even been aware it was possible to buy cars that old. And yet apparently it was, and Jake was planning to drive them all the way to Saltburn-by-the-Sea in it. He'd completely failed to mention, until around 15 minutes into their two-hour journey, that the car's blowers were permanently jammed on hot, right around the time that Lydia felt such an intense rush of heat in her chest that for a moment she feared she was prematurely menopausal.
Oh yeah,
he'd said, casually pushing his sunglasses up his nose.
I haven't got round to having that fixed yet. Just keep a window open.
Can't you turn them off? She'd asked, wiping beads of sweat from the base of her neck.
You can, he'd replied, apologetic. But once I do anything above 30 miles an hour, the hot air gets forced through anyway.
Lydia had huffed. Glad there's not a heat wave or anything, she'd said, shooting him a look even though she didn't actually think he was looking at her. It was difficult to tell behind those huge, ridiculous glasses. He looked like an extra from an 80s motorsports film. Still, she had survived the journey, and once she'd peeled herself off the tacky faux leather car seat and tumbled out onto the concrete, she was delighted to discover a fresh sea breeze taking the edge off the relentless burn of the summer sun. And then, when she turned away from the car and walked out towards the cliff edge overlooking the bay below, the view just about took her breath away. emerald-green cliffs dropped sharply to a neat strip of sand, the green-blue expanse of sea beyond it broken up by a narrow pier that stretched out 500 feet or more into the waves. The sky was as blue as she had ever seen it, with barely a scrap of cloud in the sky, and all of it came together at once to make Lydia's heart swell.
"Good, isn't it?"
Jake said, appearing next to her in those ludicrous sunglasses.
"Wait until you see the cliff lift."
And then he handed over her rucksack as he shouldered his own, nodding towards the path he wanted her to take, straight along the road towards a quaint-looking red and white wooden shack in the near distance. She watched him as they walked, subtly, from behind her own entirely reasonable sunglasses. There was something different about him today, a lightness, even more so than his usually sunny demeanour. The oven-like conditions in the car had made his sandy hair darken into sweat-damp curls about his temples, even though he wouldn't admit even for a second that he was too hot.
"I came here every summer with my family when I was small," he said then,
and with that the pieces clicked into place for her. Nostalgia had been the expression on his face that she hadn't been able to place.
"Even if it was only for a day trip, we'd make the time."
He turned to her, that smile tugging to one side.
"We complained about it relentlessly as kids, obviously."
She looked at him, not completely sure what she wanted to know when she said, "You don't talk about them much."
"My family?"
She nodded. He shrugged lightly.
"I suppose I don't."
That smile broadened.
"Not for any particular reason. I mean, they're pretty great. When they're not trying to marry me off to the highest bidder, anyway."
Lydia smiled at that. "Very relatable."
"Jen, that's my sister, is so excited about you, even though I tell her pretty much every time we talk that we're just friends."
Lydia was a little taken aback by that. She wasn't even sure why. "You've talked to her about me?"
"Of course,"
he said, knocking his shoulder lightly into hers.
"Hanging out with you is pretty much the only thing that stops me spending 7 days a week at their house."
He chuckled to himself.
"That's probably why she's so keen on you."
Lydia wasn't sure how to respond, but they reached the little red and white building before she had to, and Jake motioned for her to stop. She'd been so engrossed in their conversation that she hadn't even seen the structure of the funicular until it was right there in front of her, the rails running at an impossible angle straight down the cliff to the seafront, and the trams, also painted red and white, rising and falling on their tracks.
"This makes getting down a lot easier,"
he said with a grin, paying the man in the hut before she could and guiding her towards a white gate to the right of the building. The tram was just reaching the top on their side, and they stepped back to allow a family of five out before Jake guided her into the carriage. It was small but beautifully maintained, with smooth wooden benches and stained glass windows, and through the front window they could see the sea, with the pier stretching out directly in front of them.
"This is the oldest working water-powered inclined tramway in the world,"
Jake said as they were partway down.
"I think it's important you know that. My dad used to tell us every single time we came on here."
Lydia smiled. She wondered if Jake's dad was anything like him. She could just picture him being that way as an older man. They reached the bottom in no time and Jake led her out of the tram, through the small station and then out onto the promenade, stopping with one arm flung to the side as that same smile tugged at his mouth.
"And this," he motioned to the structure behind him, "is Yorkshire's only pier."
"Good fact," she said, one eyebrow raised. "Another Mr. Jones special?"
"Yep."
His grin widened.
"Old Hugh loves his facts."
"Welsh?" He nodded and she smiled in return. "I feel like I'm learning a lot about your family today." He didn't reply, just grinned behind his giant sunglasses and set off walking again, leaving Lydia to trot after him. They walked along the small promenade until they reached a low building on the left with a variety of primary coloured surfboards propped around it, and Jake spun back to face her.
"Ready for your next adventure, Lil?"
he asked, and despite the slight squeeze of her chest as Lily's name passed his lips, she honestly, truly was. It wasn't that Lydia had expected to be a natural surfer so much as she hadn't thought she'd be quite as bad as she actually turned out to be. It had all been so easy on the sand. She didn't pop up with quite as much pop as Jake or the four preteens who were also in their lesson, but she'd still had the drill down. Paddle, paddle, on your knees, one leg forwards and pop up. But now, waist deep in the North Sea, she was beginning to think it was a lost cause. She wrangled her board back out past the crests of the mercifully rather small waves and scrambled back onto her belly on the board with all the elegance of a river hippo. Just beside her, Jake was going for a wave, his wetsuited form looking just exactly the part as he paddled like crazy before popping almost immediately to his knees, just about a half second from reaching a standing position when he lost his footing and fell into the surf. He rose from the water's surface, raising one arm in a triumphant fist as the instructor and a few random beach walkers whooped and cheered. She should have known he'd be a bloody natural. She had said he had the hair for it. With a deep breath, she waited for a wave and paddled with all her might, finally managing to catch it, but totally failing to even get off her belly before plopping unceremoniously into the shallow water. She hastily reassessed her goal. If she could manage to ride a wave on her hands and knees, she'd call that a win. Scrambling to her feet was taking more and more energy every time, but she finally managed it, and as she waded back out to the deeper water, she found Jake waiting for her, leaning lazily on his board.
"You're getting there," he said with an encouraging grin. "You just caught that wave. You're doing great."
She looked over at him with an expression of pure disbelief, but he only laughed.
"Don't pit yourself against four 12-year-olds and a world-class sportsman."
"Former world-class sportsman," she interjected, and he laughed out loud.
"If only," he said. "One of the items on your list was Troll Jake Jones."
He raked one hand through his hair, which was twice as surfer-like when wet.
"You'd smash it."
"I might add it," Lydia deadpanned, and then she had to turn away so Jake wouldn't see the smile on her face. Again, Jake set off, and again he executed the drill exactly as they had done on the beach, seemingly unfazed by the roll of the waves. This time he managed to get to his feet, pumping one fist so vigorously into the air that he immediately lost his balance and plunged into the water. The beach erupted in cheers again. It took three more tries until Lydia got even halfway comfortable with the paddling, and on only one of those did she even manage to lift any part of herself off the board. In fact, it was just as she was beginning to completely lose faith in herself that she heard the shout from the shore.
"One more try, guys,"
the instructor was saying.
"Then your 2 hours is up."
And although Lydia could not fathom how on earth it had already been 2 hours, she very much welcomed the idea of a rest. She was suddenly incredibly glad that Jake was driving, furnace, car or otherwise. As she was preparing herself for one last go, Jake appeared from behind her, paddling like a madman on the rolling crest of a wave. Then he popped up easily, finding his balance before riding the wave in an imperfect standing pose almost all the way into the shore. Applause erupted yet again. Lydia rolled her eyes. And then it was her turn. Surrendering to the idea of giving it her best shot, she put her all into the paddling, catching the wave relatively easily and then managing to raise herself onto her hands and knees. And then, in a final, desperate act of courage, she swung one foot forwards, edging it almost all the way between her hands before she lost her balance. And the very last thing Lydia heard before she hit the water was Jake Jones cheering for her at the top of his lungs. It took a full 40 minutes for Lydia to regain feeling in all of her limbs. The instructor had told them not to worry about returning the wetsuits right away, to just enjoy this perfect day on the beach for a little while longer. And when Jake had run both of their boards back up to the surf school, she'd taken the opportunity to flop backwards onto the sand, spread-eagled, feeling the heat of the midday sun easing the gnawing ache in her shoulder muscles. He'd chuckled when he arrived back to find her there, but he didn't say anything, just rolled his wetsuit down to his waist and sat down beside her, the sea breeze doing what it could to blow around the wet clumps of his hair. They didn't move or speak for what felt like a long time, and Lydia was glad of that. It was a welcome chance to recharge, and with each passing minute she felt a little more of her strength returning. She didn't know how long she'd been there, but when she finally sat up next to him, his hair had begun to dry into tousled waves. She'd have worried about the state of hers if she had even the slightest morsel of energy left.
"Better?"
he asked simply, and she nodded in return, still a little way off forming words. They sat together a while longer, Jake looking out to sea, Lydia watching the comings and goings of the beachfront crowd. For a moment, she thought she saw a figure she recognised, but they were a little too far away for her to properly see. And she soon got distracted by the loud goings-on of the family who had set up camp beside them. They were bilingual, slipping seamlessly between English and a vaguely European language that Lydia couldn't quite place. The older couple chose to speak in the other language the majority of the time, veering between the tone that Aga and Bashir used when they were trying to talk about strangers without them knowing and flat out shouting at one another. The younger couple watched their toddler waddle about on the sand, each in turn occasionally chancing a nap before being roughly awoken by said child. And then there was another woman, perhaps an aunt, who had brought a cool box stuffed absolutely to the gills and was loudly trying to feed everyone. She watched them for a while before lightly knocking Jake's shoulder with her own. "If you want to get any idea of what my family is like," she said quietly enough so that their neighbours would not be able to overhear, "basically, it's them." And she nodded her head towards the family as subtly as she could.
"Then I definitely want to meet them," Jake said, breaking into a wide smile. "Who doesn't want to get fed at the beach?"
"Actual results may vary," Lydia muttered, but she couldn't stop herself from smiling too. Bashir would definitely bring a giant box of food to the seaside.
"And speaking of food," Jake said, springing to his feet with the energy of someone who definitely hadn't just been surfing for 2 hours. "What do you say we get out of these wetsuits and track some down? I'm starving."
He held out a hand to pull her up and she accepted it gratefully, needing all the help she could get. She was just about to haul herself to her feet when she saw something behind Jake that almost made her heart stutter to a stop. She thought she'd seen someone she recognised earlier on, and she had been quite right. Her husband and his girlfriend were walking along the beach right there to Jake's left. Ex-husband, And then, as if the sight of them strolling along hand in hand weren't enough to turn Lydia's stomach, Adam looked over at her right at that moment, almost as if he had known Lydia was there all along. From that point, it all seemed to happen in slow motion. From Adam opening his mouth and calling the first syllable of her name, to Lydia involuntarily tightening her grip on the hand Jake had offered her and pulling herself up, stopping opposite him with the thunder of her pulse in her ears and a sudden rush of adrenaline in her veins. And then her moving towards Jake like a reflex as she did the only thing she could think of in that moment, the only thing she knew for certain would stop Adam in his tracks, the only thing she knew would stop him outing her to Jake as boring old Lydia and not lively Lily. She used the hand she was holding as leverage, and without really thinking in too much detail about the gravity of what she was about to do, She used it to pull herself flush to Jake's chest, and then she reached her free hand around to the back of his neck.
"Play along," she whispered,
just a split second before her lips found his. And though his hand momentarily gripped hers in what she could only assume was absolute shock, he did. Oh, God, he did. For a second, his body tensed up completely, his lips pressing into a flat line against hers before they pulled away from her, just an inch or two. And for a second, she thought he was going to push her away. But he didn't. Instead, that tension left his body as a ragged breath out, and he dropped the hand he was holding, reaching those fingers into the loose, still damp hairs at the nape of her neck, before he pulled her face back towards his lips seeking hers out. And this time, she noticed it all. The brush of his stubble on her skin, the softness of his lips, still salty from the sea as they closed around hers. And then, lower, the gentle graze of his thumb under her jawbone, the wild beat of his heart through the skin of his chest as her hand rested against it, the tentative grip of his other hand on her hip over the creased fabric of her wetsuit, pulling her closer and closer and closer. He pulled back for a bit, his teeth grazing her lower lip ever so slightly as he did. And then, with the smallest of growls which seemed to come from somewhere very low down in his throat, the tone of the kiss changed completely. His mouth angled a little more, opening against hers as their tongues met, firing a single thunderbolt of desire deep down into the very pit of her belly. Lydia had never been kissed like this, not once in her entire life. She'd had hot kisses, of course, and gentle kisses and angry kisses, and probably almost every type of kiss in between. But not one single kiss that had reached so deeply into the very marrow of her bones. She wasn't entirely sure how she was still upright. She definitely didn't want it to end. But it did end, just a moment or two later, as Jake rested his forehead lightly against hers, his breath sweet and warm on her face. He took a deep breath, and just before he pulled away from her completely, he muttered,
"Will that do?"
In a low voice, a rasp to it so slight that she wasn't sure whether she had imagined it. And then he smiled at her, just as he had 100 times before, and the small scar on his lip pulled the expression slightly off kilter, just as it always had. Except, suddenly, irrationally, that small scar on his lip was the only thing she could think about. Chapter 20. Lydia hadn't even untangled herself from the grip of Jake's embrace when she caught Adam's gaze, behind and off to the left of them. He'd stopped, exactly where he had been when she last saw him, as if he hadn't moved an inch since then. And the look on his face was something she hadn't seen on him for a very long time. Not since those early days when they'd had blazing rows about Lydia spending so much time with Tosh. He was thoroughly, undecidedly jealous. And that had been her goal, hadn't it? The entire point of the list, she'd wanted to make Adam realise how fun and desirable she still was. She'd wanted to make him realise what he was missing, and she'd wanted to make him fall back in love with her. That was something she wanted, something she longed for, something she would do anything to make happen. Wasn't it? After a beat, Adam turned away and practically stomped up the beach away from her, Aurora trotting after him on those long, perfect legs. It was only then that Lydia moved her hands away from where they'd come to rest on Jake's body. She'd barely even realised she was still holding them. "Sorry about that," she said, taking an awkward step back. "I had to..." Her tongue suddenly felt several sizes too big for her mouth. "Think on my feet."
"A relative?"
he asked. She shook her head. "Ex." He nodded slowly, that same crooked smile on his face, and she blushed furiously as her eyes caught on it. But if Jake noticed, he didn't react, and he motioned up the beach towards the surf school.
Come on, Lil, let's get out of these wetsuits and find ourselves some grub.
His use of Lily's name tugged at her, the way it always had, except this time the feeling ran a little colder. It felt a little less like annoyance and a little more like guilt. Still, she swallowed it down, like always, and smiled back at him with a nod. She was going to need a little longer before she could trust her mouth not to show her up. It definitely couldn't be relied upon at all with the taste of sea salt and Jake still lingering on her lips. They walked back up the beach together, both seemingly careful to leave enough distance between them, and Lydia was almost overwhelmed with relief when they made it to the small reception of the surf school, collected their locker keys and headed back down the stairs to the changing rooms. There were separate male and female changing rooms, but they shared communal showers, just a small wet room with six shower heads placed evenly around three sides of it. Jake was already in the shower room when Lydia entered it, the act of taking her damp wetsuit off turning out to be a much more difficult affair than she'd anticipated, something akin to de-skinning a sausage. She deliberately chose the shower too away from his. The mere idea of being either right beside or directly opposite him making her tense up. She had always thought there was something strangely intimate about watching someone shower, and the fact that she had been in his arms less than 10 minutes ago wasn't helping that feeling one bit. Still, the pounding of the shower on her aching muscles distracted her from all that, if only for a second, and she closed her eyes against the force of the spray. She washed the salt out of her hair and off as much of her body as she could around her tankini, finding some comfort in the routine. At one point, she was so lost in her own thoughts that she accidentally looked straight over at Jake, who was just in the process of rinsing his hair, head thrown right back while sudsy water cascaded down the ridges of his body, like it was in some kind of sexy photo shoot. God help her. Quickly turning back towards the shower stream, she just about managed to acknowledge Jake when he shut his shower off and passed her, telling her that he'd meet her outside the building, and she felt something like a sigh of relief when the door closed behind him, leaving her with her own thoughts and the suddenly extremely distracting scent of Jake's shower gel. What the hell was wrong with her? It was almost 20 minutes later when Lydia walked back out into the blinding light of the summer sun, and she closed her eyes against it with a small smile as she reached the wall where Jake was sitting. She had always loved the summer. She apologised for keeping him waiting, although he didn't seem at all concerned by it, and together they walked off in search of food. The slight churn of Lydia's stomach had done a fine job at hiding her hunger, but when the smell of a nearby fish and chip stall hit her, it roared back all at once, and words spilled out of her before she even knew she was going to speak. I'd kill a man for some fish and chips right about now. And Jake turned to her, one corner of his mouth hitched slightly.
Well, considering there's only me and you here, that does concern me a little bit.
Yeah, it should, she said without looking at him, fighting a smile to the best of her ability. But he just laughed, heading straight for the stall, ordering for both of them and waving away any of Lydia's attempts to pay for her share. You don't have to pay for my food now just because we kissed once, she blurted, and she immediately wanted to grab the words and throw them far away where he would never be able to hear them ever. But that, of course, was impossible, and he just looked back at her, both eyebrows ever so slightly raised as he said, with only the slightest trace of humour in his voice,
I'm not paying for your food because we kissed.
There was an edge of something in his voice, and it made Lydia want to disappear into a hole in the ground.
I'm paying for your food because we're celebrating.
Her forehead creased in confusion. We're celebrating? He chuckled.
Come on, Lily.
And with that, he produced the red felt tip from the pocket of his shorts. She'd completely forgotten about the list in the wake of that kiss, but she pulled it out on autopilot, conditioned like one of Pavlov's dogs. She drew a thick line through 6, go surfing, and turned to hand the pen back to him, still without the foggiest idea what it was they were supposed to be celebrating. He must have been able to read her expression like a book, because he laughed aloud, taking the pen back when she offered it and pocketing it without taking his eyes off her.
As of today, you are officially more than halfway through your list.
5 down, she said as she realised, and he smiled broadly as he replied,
4 to go.
They ate their food sitting at the bottom of the paved slope where it met the beach, digging bare feet into the sand while shovelling deliciously vinegary batter and fish and chips into their mouths as the sun beat down on them from a cloudless sky. Lydia watched the roll of the waves while she ate, feeling suddenly overwhelmed by the raw power of the water. And then she couldn't help but be struck by a curious feeling of pride that she'd actually surfed those waves, in the loosest possible sense of the word surf, obviously. She, an extremely unfit woman of not quite 40, had surfed for the very first time, and she hadn't drowned or cried or been beheaded by a surfboard in the kind of freak accident that you read about in online news columns. Surely that was something to be proud of.
Yes, Jake said,
brandishing a stack of chips speared on a wooden fork.
It is.
Lydia hadn't realised that she'd said any of that out loud. She turned to look at him with a sheepish smile, trying her best to ignore the subtle kick in her pulse as their eyes met. And that set the tone for the rest of the afternoon. They walked along the promenade, dipped hot feet into the same waves they'd surfed, and generally enjoyed the bliss of an almost perfect summer day at the seaside. At least Jake did. Lydia was much too busy trying not to lose her damn mind. At one point, Jake treated them both to an ice cream from a small shack right on the beach, and Lydia almost had a hot flush watching him lick small beads of melting ice cream from the edges of his cone. She had to look away in the end, staring stiffly out to sea and trying her absolute hardest to act cool, while her insides smouldered like hot coals. And then, when they were finally ready to say goodbye to the sea, they walked back to the funicular station at the bottom of that steep hill. There were only 2 seats left in the carriage when it arrived, and Jake walked in before she could even suggest waiting for the next one. He turned to smile at her as he sat down, leaving her no other choice than to head in too and take the seat directly opposite him, her heart speeding again as she caught that same scent of shower gel. The incredibly vivid, incredibly hot memory of him soaping himself in the shower flashed back into her mind's eye, and she coughed away her embarrassment quickly, like some kind of hopeless, love-struck teenager.
"You okay?"
he asked gently, and the knot of his concerned brows made her stomach churn all over again. But she forced a smile and nodded as confidently as her traitorous body would allow her to. "Fine," she said, and he smiled in return, a strange quality to the twist of his lips that left her thinking about them long after the smile itself had faded. By the time they got back to the car, almost a full 6 hours after they left it, Lydia was a little sunburned, a little sore, and a lot ready to have the best kip of her life in the passenger seat of Jake's car. Then she remembered that Jake's car was like some kind of automotive sweat lodge. For God's sake. She slipped off the light shirt she'd been wearing over what had turned out to be a much skimpier vest than she remembered, and then nearly died on the spot when she met Jake's questioning eyes over the top of the car's roof. "Just preparing for my sauna," she said with a shrug that she hoped looked several times more casual than it felt. He laughed at that, at least, and for a moment it felt as if nothing had changed, just that same old easy energy between them and not this strange new dynamic. At least, for Lydia, there was a strange new dynamic. Jake was just acting absolutely normally, as if they hadn't shared a bone-melting, spine-tingling, earth-shattering kiss only a couple of hours ago. "Oh. Oh, no." A thought came to her. Something she actually hadn't considered until that very moment. Maybe the kiss had not been bone-melting, spine-tingling or earth-shattering for Jake. He had taken the whole thing absolutely in his stride, acting like nothing at all had changed, while she, in contrast, was a red-hot mess. God, how embarrassing! She was extremely grateful that she'd realised this in advance of actually discussing the day's events with another person. She could have come out looking like a ripe pillock. She tried to ignore the vague stab of disappointment at her epiphany and climbed into the car, already burning hot from the sun beating through the windows all day before Jake had even turned on the engine. The drive home was quiet, particularly after Lydia pretended to fall asleep to allow her to mull over the day's events. Her actually surfing seemed like days ago now, what with the seismic shift of her emotions in the wake of that kiss. And the kiss itself, good God, she'd never felt anything like it. The soft brush of his lips, the way they'd felt both strangely familiar and absolutely new at the same time. And then how that had changed in a second to something altogether different, raw and honest, not to mention hot as all hell. Her body hummed with desire just thinking about it. But then that had given way to the awkwardness of the aftermath, to her putting her foot in her mouth time and time again while Jake casually tried to make her feel better, just like he always did. Because, obviously, as far as he was concerned, nothing at all had changed. She'd asked him to play along and he had. That was it. And as they sped back through the North Yorkshire countryside, there was only one thing that Lydia knew for sure. She needed to track down Ollie or Mila for a full debrief of the day's events. And she needed to do it now. Chapter 21.
I hope this is good,
Ollie said with a yawn later that night.
Since you've woken me at the absolute ass crack of dawn to tell me whatever it is.
Lydia's brows tugged together in confusion. It's 11 p.m. here. I thought that would make it the afternoon where you are.
Why are you so bad at time differences?
Ollie shook her head, rubbing sleep out of one eye.
I'm 7 hours ahead.
She gathered particularly mad hair into a loose knot on top of her head.
It's 6 a.m.
Sorry. Lydia half screwed her face up before wincing at the pinch of sunburn on her cheeks. Ollie waved her mother's concern away.
Go on, tell me.
Another yawn.
You turned out to be a surfing master?
Lydia snorted a laugh. God, no. She thought back to the slap of her neoprene belly on the shallow water. I was rubbish.
Jake was amazing, I assume.
Obviously, Lydia said, a strange catch in her throat as she thought about it. I think we knew that would happen. Ollie nodded, a smile just lifting the corners of her mouth.
Also, turns out Jake's amazing at something else, Lydia continued, feeling her belly tighten at the memory.
Ollie perked right up at that.
Interested?
Well, Lydia started. We were sitting on the beach afterwards, and I saw your dad, of all people, and he saw me.
Right?
Right, so he saw us, and he started to call my name.
Okay.
And I was so worried that...
Lydia tailed off, remembering all of a sudden that while her daughter did know about Lily Bennett, she wasn't actually aware that Lydia was pretending to be her. All her breath escaped at once.
Right, well, I actually need to start this story a little bit earlier in the timeline.
Remember, it's 6 a.m, Mum.
Ollie rolled her eyes.
Just the main plot points, please.
Okay, Lydia said, trying to mentally organise the key facts. So, I found Lily's list, which you know, and I'm doing all the things on said list, which you know.
Ollie nodded slowly.
But what you don't know is that Jake currently thinks that I am Lily Bennett.
Lydia shrugged.
That's about the long and short of it. Ollie didn't react for a moment, and when she did, her eyes nearly popped out of her head.
What?
Lydia blushed.
Jake thinks that I'm Lily Bennet. I got that,
Ollie whisper shrieked back.
Why would he think that?
Because I told him that I was.
Oh my God, Mum, why?
I don't know why, Lydia sighed. Because it was at that time when I'd just found out about your dad and Aurora, and I felt frumpy and fragile and boring and irrelevant. She looked away from the screen, away from her daughter. And along came list-writing Lily, all fun and adventurous, all beautiful and bright, and I wanted to be that. I didn't want to be me. Ollie's voice softened a notch.
Mum, we've been through this.
She smiled gently as Lydia chanced a look back up at her.
You are beautiful and bright. You're the best person I know.
Lydia smiled back at her daughter, but a lump was forming in her throat, that same emotion pulling at her mouth as she said,
You have to say that.
No, Ollie said. I don't. I'm a kid and you're my mum. It's actually weird that I'm saying that, but I'm saying it because it's true.
Her head tilted to the side slightly.
Now, because I'm a kid and it's 6 a.m, I'm going to need you to keep going with this story so that I can go back to sleep as soon as possible.
Right, Lydia said. Sorry. Fingers found the knuckles of her opposite hand, anxiety tracing them in a pattern.
So, in the context of Jake thinking I'm Lily, I saw your dad and he started to call my name, and I was so worried that he'd bust my cover with Jake that I had to do whatever I could to stop him.
Okay, that makes more sense, Ollie said, her voice calm and encouraging.
So what did you do?
I kissed him.
You kissed Dad?
Ollie nearly fell off her chair.
No!
Lydia couldn't stop her giggle.
I kissed Jake. What?
Ollie was out of her chair this time, face right up to the screen.
Why didn't you lead with that?
Lydia shrugged. You distracted me with time zone maths.
Ignore the time zone thing,
Ollie said, eyes wide.
How was it?
Well,
bad.
No.
Good.
Ollie raised an eyebrow, and Lydia couldn't help her blush when she said,
Yeah.
Don't just give me yeah. Oh my God.
Ollie looked as if she were about to lose her mind.
Okay, what are we talking? On a scale of awkward forehead kiss from Pam Mytek to like 8 or 9 on the Richter scale.
Lydia screwed her face up.
I don't know what that means.
Ah, you're the worst.
Ollie's eyes rolled almost all the way back into her head.
Okay, a simple scale, 1 to 10.
Lydia didn't hesitate for a second. 10. Ollie squealed so high that the computer speakers struggled to relay the sound. But Lydia shook her head, something about her daughter's excitement sitting uncomfortably with her.
But it doesn't mean anything, Ol. It was one incredible kiss, but that's all it was.
Ollie's expression softened.
Mum, listen to yourself.
But that just made Lydia shake her head even more. Her voice, when she spoke, was slow and insistent.
I love your dad. He's who I want to be with.
Ollie pursed her lips.
You sure?
No.
Yes,
Lydia replied quickly, and then quieter.
Probably.
Ollie nodded slowly, fingers running thoughtfully along her chin.
Can I be honest with you?
Lydia huffed a laugh. Aren't you always?
You might not like it.
Another laugh. I generally don't. But the expression on Ollie's face was deadly serious, and it made quiet fingers of dread grasp at Lydia's ribcage. Ollie took a deep breath before speaking again, her hesitation obvious even over the video chat.
I don't think you should get back together with Dad.
Lydia's heart sank, closely followed by her face.
What?
I don't think you should get back together.
Ollie's pause was longer this time, her words only just loud enough to hear.
I'm not sure you were as happy as you thought you were.
Lydia's heart stopped dead in her chest. Denial jumped in before anything else, and when she muttered, "You're wrong," it was a reflex, her mouth reacting while her heart scrambled to understand what the truth was. So she went with the only thing she knew to be true. "I love him." Ollie's smile was so soft, so understanding, that it almost broke Lydia's heart.
"I know, I love him too, you know that."
She blew away a stray curl which had fallen into her face.
"And I think he's the best dad in the world. Nothing's going to change that."
She looked up then, straight at Lydia as she spoke the words that would change her mother's reality forever.
"But I don't ever remember him being a very good husband."
Lydia ignored the small cracks in her heart at first.
"He always did his share with you. We were only your age, you know, when we had you, and you never wanted for anything."
"I know," Ollie nodded solemnly. "I agree. But I'm talking about the way it was with you."
"Crack?" Lydia frowned. "What do you mean?"
"He was always trying to... I don't know."
Ollie gestured vaguely, searching for the words.
"Make you better. I remember because I didn't like hearing it."
One side of her mouth tipped up into a tentative smile.
"Because I've always thought you were already the best, just exactly how you are."
Crack. And with that, there was a part of Lydia's heart that shattered completely, lost to the fading memories of the perfect life she'd thought she had. She had spent so long focusing on one goal, just one single outcome, that she had never even considered her path veering off in any other direction. It had been a binary, succeed or fail, get Adam back or lose him forever. There was nothing else, she'd thought. But maybe, after all, there was.
"Why are you telling me this now?"
she asked, partway between grief and hope, as she had been for the whole of the last 2 years, but for perhaps a different reason now. And her daughter smiled, so like her dad, but so different at the same time, as she said from 9,102 miles away,
"Because I think you're finally ready to hear it."
It was almost 11 the following morning when Lydia padded down to the kitchen, still in her pyjamas. She'd slept fitfully, jerking awake more than once from dreams so vivid that it had taken her more than a few seconds to realise they weren't real. She rifled around in the bread bin and popped a couple of slices into the toaster with a yawn, feeling the burn of Agger's eyes on her from all the way across the room.
"Morning, Mama,"
she said, without turning around, and she smiled to herself as she heard the soft tut from across the room.
"You're up late this morning."
There was an edge to Agger's voice, but that wasn't unusual. Lydia often couldn't tell whether she was being reprimanded or consoled.
"Didn't sleep well,"
she said, pulling a tub of butter out of the fridge. She turned to look at her mother for the first time. Agger was sitting at the far side of the table, her face set in its usual stern expression as she nursed a steaming cup of lemon tea. She scanned Lydia quickly before their eyes met.
"Your sunburn looks better today," she said,
tone still exactly the same.
"I told you the tea would work."
Agger was a firm believer that either black tea or garlic could cure almost any ill when prepared in the correct manner. She'd gasped out loud when she saw Lydia's rosy face the previous evening and had made her lie for almost 30 minutes with 4 freshly boiled tea bags balanced precariously on her sore wrist parts. It had worked a treat, although Lydia never did like to admit that her mother was right.
"It was probably the aftersun," she said,
trying as hard as she could to conceal the smile on her face. She fished a knife out of the drawer beside the sink, buttering her toast with long, thoughtful strokes.
"There's still some of Jeff's marmalade in the pantry if you want it."
Aga asked, and it almost sounded like a peace offering, though Lydia did not think they had been fighting. Maybe Aga was trying to butter her up for something. And she did go to grab the marmalade, despite any ulterior preserve-related motive. Uncle Jeff had developed quite the obsession since his retirement a couple of years previously with pickling and preserving anything he could get his hands on. Most of his creations left a great deal to be desired, but his marmalades, quite miraculously, were far better than any Lydia had tried in her life. Blood orange and bourbon marmalade, the label on this one said, and Lydia smiled as she spread it thickly on her toast. It smelt as amazing as it sounded, and she took a big bite at just exactly the same time as Aga dropped a bomb on her.
"So I hear you are finally moving on from Adam."
Lydia nearly choked on her toast and marmalade. This was why her mother was being nice to her. "You listened in on my conversation." Aga rolled her eyes and took another sip of tea.
"Mishka, please. I am a light sleeper and the walls of this house are very thin."
"Whatever," Lydia muttered, instantly feeling herself regress 20 years to when she was sitting at this same table, listening to her mother reel off all the reasons why Adam, and she always called him Adam, never the Polish diminutive, which Lydia had always taken as a lack of acceptance, would not make a suitable husband nor a capable father. Lydia was pleased, at the very least, that her mother had been half wrong. Not that Aga was ever willing to accept fault, of course.
"I'm just saying that Olivka is a very wise young woman," Aga said,
her sparse, makeup-free brows pulling into a slightly less sinister frown than usual.
"Much more so," her head tilted judgmentally, "than her mother, apparently."
Lydia sighed. "You heard all of it?"
"Not all," Aga took another sip. "Thanks to your tata snoring. You know, I just cannot fathom how a man makes such little noise while awake, can be so loud when he sleeps."
She fixed Lydia with a stern look.
"But I heard enough."
Lydia's shoulders slumped in defeat. "So, you know, I'm not really with Jake."
"But you want to be?"
Aga asked slowly, as if trying to work out a puzzle. "No," Lydia cried automatically and then more quietly. "I don't know." Aga nodded once, lips pursed as if finally understanding her daughter's predicament.
"But he doesn't know who you really are."
Lydia's laugh escaped as little more than a breath out. "Does anyone?"
"Your daughter, apparently."
"You think she's right?" Lydia asked, torn between wanting and also not wanting to know. "About Adam?" Aga paused for a moment, weighing her words as she so rarely did, before saying simply,
"I do."
"You never liked him." It was a statement, but Aga answered as if it had been a question.
"No."
Lydia had known that, of course. Aga was not one to sugarcoat anything, and that was why Lydia knew that she could trust her mother's answer when she asked the question that had played on her mind all night long. "Do you think he ever loved me?" Aga's expression softened then, as much as Aga ever softened.
"Lydka, yes, of course."
Her face fell into a light frown.
"I know he did. But your babsha told me, and I am telling you that love isn't enough. You have to be evenly yoked."
Lydia's nose crinkled.
"Yoked? Like oxen pulling a plow?"
Aga threw her hands up in frustration.
"Mishko, come on, your ancestors were farmers."
"Oh, sorry." Aga braced herself, an action Lydia had seen her perform a number of times before complimenting someone or giving them advice. Lydia braced herself in turn.
"You are a capable person, Lydka, more capable than I think you realize,"
Aga started, her voice serious.
"You know, I raised you to be the kind of woman who can grow her own potatoes."
Wow, you're really going deep with the farming metaphors today. Lydia hadn't been able to resist. Her mother glared at her.
I am saying that although I know you are strong enough to shoulder the whole load in a marriage, you shouldn't have to.
Lydia's mouth quirked into the slightest of smiles. Are you trying to give me relationship advice?
Not trying, Mishko, doing.
Aga's face was still as serious as Lydia had ever seen it.
When you marry again?
Lydia snorted. Hold your horses. I kissed one other man once. Well, almost. She didn't mention Matt or Mark or whatever his bloody name was.
When you marry again,
Aga repeated more sternly.
You must remember that love itself is not enough. You also should be evenly yoked, sharing the load, pulling in the same direction.
And for the first time in a very long time, Lydia did not laugh at her mother nor roll her eyes, because she knew, beyond the oxen and the potatoes, that Aga was right. And if she were really honest with herself, she could finally admit that somewhere, very deep down, beyond the veneer of everything that she had thought was perfect about her life, maybe a part of her had known it all along. She was also suddenly and very surely struck by an idea for the next item on the list. She finished her toast in a couple of bites and took the plate to the sink in Aga's small kitchen, though she did take a moment before she went to find her phone to kiss her mother lightly on the cheek. And Lydia's voice, when she spoke, had absolutely no trace of her usual snark. Thank you, Mama. Chapter 22. It was nearly 2 full weeks until Lydia saw Jake again, and though intellectually she knew that it was down to circumstance, she couldn't help the small voice in her head that occasionally wondered if he was avoiding her. They'd been texting just like normal, but the more and more time that passed after the kiss, the more and more neurotic Lydia began to feel. So by the time she was walking up to meet him in town on that blissfully warm mid-July day, she was a live bundle of nerves, so much so that she was almost mowed down by at least one bus on her short walk up Vicar Lane. His message had said, "Meet me by the corn exchange. The tattoo shop is just behind it." But the nearer she got to it, the heavier her heart seemed to lurch in her chest. It's just Jake, she thought to herself, but that didn't calm her raging nerves any. The thought of her impending torture wasn't helping matters either, although she was pleased that she had finally managed to settle on an idea for the design. She'd sent her thoughts to Eddie, the tattoo artist Jake had linked her up with, and received a thumbs-up emoji and a smiley face in return, which Lydia had taken to mean the idea was a go. She passed the markets on her left, heart jumping and lurching as she neared her final destination. She could have parked just round the corner from the corn exchange itself, but she'd chosen a car park at the top end of town instead, welcoming the walk as a way to get herself together. Not that it was working particularly well. She passed the row of bus stops on her right-hand side, and then all of a sudden he was there. Casual as always, leaning on the railings which faced the old round building. He didn't see her at first, and she used that to her advantage, taking in the angle of his shoulders and the loose mop of his hair. He was dressed all in black today, a strange departure from his usual style, like some kind of off-duty puppeteer, but something about it tugged at her chest, and by the time she'd crossed the last road, she was quite out of breath. He didn't notice her until she was about 12 feet away because he was distracted by a busker playing an intricate solo on a bright blue guitar on the stone steps of the entranceway. When Jake did see her, his face at once erupted into a huge beaming smile, and the small voice in her head, which had been telling her that he was distancing himself, was forced to quieten down, at least for a little while.
"Hey, stranger,"
he said, his mouth twisting in that off-centre smile which he had missed so much. Her smile back at him felt like a welcome exhale. "He's good," she said, nodding towards the busker, who had now begun to sing, the rasp of his deep tones making Lydia's heart sing too. Jake nodded enthusiastically.
"He's brilliant. I've been watching for about 10 minutes and it just keeps getting better."
"So you're basically his groupie now?" Lydia said, a smirk feeling more awkward than usual, but Jake just threw his head back and laughed.
"Something like that."
And then his smile dropped a little, eyes trained on Lydia as he said, more quietly,
"You ready for this?"
She smiled, forcing her anxiety deep down where he wouldn't be able to see it.
"For a light stabbing? Never more ready."
He laughed again, standing up off the railing and motioning down one of the small streets encircling the old Victorian building.
"You're good with pain. You're going to smash it."
She raised an eyebrow.
"How do you know I am?"
"Let's see,"
he said with a smile, setting off at his usual skip of a walk down the street he'd pointed out.
"Twisted ankle, intestines in the mouth, fall from a horse, epic belly flop into the sea, and what was the other one?"
"Bite on the bum."
He nodded, eyes half closing as he did.
"Of course. Why do I always forget that one?"
"My bum is obviously forgettable," she said, pushing out her bottom lip dramatically.
Jake smirked, but he didn't look at her, and Lydia felt a rush of heat surge down through her ridiculous, traitorous body. But that heat was soon replaced by panic when Jake stopped in front of a shop a few moments later and turned back to her with a smile.
"Here we go."
The shop was brighter inside than Lydia had thought it'd be, all whitewashed brick and high gloss grey with huge strip lights making up for the lack of any windows along the side walls. Beautiful, intricate prints hung in frames around the top edge of the room, while lower down on the walls, small sketches were pinned to cork boards like rustic swarms of butterflies. Two black couches sat side by side in the room beyond the reception desk, wrapped neatly in cling film, with two more visible through the archway at the back of the room. The nearest two were occupied by hip youngsters deep in conversation.